Isaiah chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. The word that Isaiah, son of Amoz, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. In days to come, the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established as the highest of the mountains, and shall be raised above the hills. All the nations shall stream to it. Many peoples shall come and say, "Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, and that we may walk in his paths." For out of Zion shall go forth instruction, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations, and shall arbitrate for many peoples. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. And from the fifth chapter of the Gospel from Matthew, verses 38 and 39. You have heard it said that it was an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evildoer. But if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. These are the words of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God. Will you pray with me this morning? Gracious God, as we come to address this subject of gun violence, as we come to open our hearts to your Spirit, I pray that the words of my mouth, but the meditations of all of our hearts, be acceptable to you. For Lord, you are our rock and our Redeemer. Amen. You know, in our call to worship, it ended by saying, "Let the conversation begin." And that's really what this is. It's the beginning of a conversation. I don't have all the answers or maybe any answers, and yet we have come today to open ourselves to a conversation because it's important. You know, there's an interesting scene in the movie Grand Canyon. I don't know if you've ever seen Grand Canyon or even heard of it. Probably been to the Grand Canyon, but it was 1991, which seems like yesterday, but gosh, it's over 30 years ago now. A movie came out called Grand Canyon with some pretty big stars. It had Steve Martin in it, Danny Glover, Kevin Kline, Mary McDonald, Mary Louise Parker, some of the biggest movie stars of the 90s. And there's this opening scene in the movie where Kevin Kline has just gone to a Los Angeles Lakers game. And he gets done, and he's trying to avoid the post-game traffic. And so he takes an alternative route, takes a shortcut. Now, I was just in Los Angeles a few weeks ago with my son, and I understand why you'd want to avoid that traffic in Los Angeles. It's a mess. And I've been in a number of Uber cars when they've taken me back to the airport, and they find all these back roads. So this isn't unusual, but in the movie, he gets off on these back roads and he starts going through kind of a rough neighborhood. And of all things, his car dies right there in the neighborhood. And so he stops, he has a cell phone, he calls a tow truck. But while he's waiting, another car pulls up behind him. And five young men get out and they start to threaten him. And his worst nightmare is starting to become a reality. And just before it really gets out of hand, the tow truck pulls up, driven by Danny Glover. And he gets out and he just starts hooking up the disabled car as if nothing else is going on. And of course, the young men start to protest and they let him know that they have this situation under control. He doesn't need to be there and that he can just go on his way. And Danny Glover finally asks which one is the leader. He pulls him aside, and he has this conversation with him. And this is what he said. He says, "Man, the world ain't supposed to be like this. I mean, maybe you don't know that yet, but this ain't the way it's supposed to be. I'm supposed to be able to do my job without having to ask you if I can. And that dude is supposed to be able to wait with his car without you ripping him off. Everything is supposed to be different than it is here." You know, a theologian, Cornelius Plantinga, wrote a book. I had to read it in seminary. It was called Not the Way It's Supposed to Be. And his premise, he says, is one of the basics of classic Christian theology. And it's exactly what Danny Glover says to those young men in that movie. Something is not right in this world. It ain't supposed to work like this. This is not what God intended. And we inherently know it in our spirits. And yet, we often feel helpless to do anything about it. And I don't know about you, I remember that feeling many times in my life where it just says, this isn't the way it's supposed to be. And yet feeling like, I don't know how to fix this. I don't have the answers. In fact, I can remember very clearly one of those times, April 27th, 1999. I was in a hospital room with my wife, Diana, because later that morning she was going to give birth to our son, Kyle. And it was early in the morning that day, and I had the television on, and it was kind of funny. In the labor and delivery part of the hospital, they had taken ESPN off of the TVs. Because I guess too many husbands were watching that instead of paying attention to their spouse, and so they had just taken it off completely. You couldn't get that channel. And so I was watching the news. And there was only one story on that news that day, because it was about two young men who had walked into Columbine High School. They were armed with semi-automatic weapons and explosives, and they were able to kill 12 students and a teacher and injure 21 more students before they finally turned the guns on themselves. And it wasn't the first mass shooting at a school that we'd ever witnessed in this country, but it's the first one I remember, the first one that seemed to make the news, the first one in what's become a series of events. In fact, it was the deadliest school shooting in U.S. history until 2012, when that was surpassed by Sandy Hook. And in 2018 again, when it was surpassed by Parkland High School. But one reason that this particular shooting stands out for me is because as I sat in that hospital room, and that's all that was on the news, and I was there to share in the birth of my son with my wife, Diana, and that day was supposed to be filled with joy and hope and expectation. But what was really on my mind, something is wrong with this world. It's not supposed to be like that. It's not supposed to be where children go to school and wonder, are they going to come home? And parents wonder if their children are going to make it back. And I thought, what is my son going to experience in this world? Am I really being responsible bringing him into a world this dangerous? I have to tell you, I have rewritten this Sunday morning's message about three or four times in my head. I didn't put it down on paper because I kept changing my mind what it is that I wanted to say. And I'm just going to be honest, I am not an expert on gun violence. That's not something I've spent a lot of time studying, and that's not what I went to school for. In fact, I took a quiz this week. There was a quiz that I got on gun violence. I got 5 out of 13 questions right. So that's how much of an expert I am not. And yet, when it comes to solutions, I think I feel as helpless as anyone, because this is a difficult subject. It's complicated. And there are many different things to think about. And one of the problems is that every time we try to address it, we try to say, you know, something's not right here. What can we do? It goes from the subject of gun violence to gun rights, which are connected. And yet they're two different subjects. One is about the right to own a firearm. One is how to address the potential for violence when we have this many guns. And it's, I think that second question is more powerful, or that the more powerful the weapon we have, the more dangerous they become and the more potential for violence. I don't own a gun. And I rarely shot one, but my cousin was a police officer in Newport Beach, California, part of the Los Angeles area. And so I got to visit her one time, and she took me on a ride along and took me to the police station to get a tour of everything. And I remember going down into the basement. They had a shooting range down in the basement of the police station. And she took me down there, and they had this really high-powered rifle. And the person who was down there in charge of the shooting range asked me if I'd like to shoot it. And I tell you, I was nervous, not because about shooting a gun. I was nervous I was going to embarrass myself because I'd never shot anything like that before. And you were aiming at a target, and you know, some of your ego gets in the way. But of course, I wanted to try it. And so I shot the gun. I'm going to tell you I hit the target because you can't prove I didn't. But I got done, and the person said, well, do you want to shoot it again? And I said, sure, I'll try it again. And he says, well, I have to put another bullet in the gun. I said, this gun only holds one bullet? He goes, no, I'm not giving you a gun with more than one bullet till I know what you're going to do with that gun. He wanted to make sure I was shooting at the target and nobody else. He wasn't going to put multiple rounds in there. And I realized that there is a great responsibility. But he himself knew better than to trust me with that kind of power with more than one bullet until he really knew what I might do with that. He wasn't just going to hand it over to me. You know, Cornelius Plantiga points out that this premise of our human predicament, that the world is not the way it's supposed to be. But he also reminds us that our scriptures have something to say about that, that our theology tries to give us an alternative vision to how things seem to be in the world. That our concept of the way that things are supposed to be comes from the scriptures themselves. And it's what God intended for creation, that includes a world of peace and of justice, of mutual respect and deliberate attention to the public good. And in the Hebrew Bible, there's a word for that. It's shalom, which in English we try to translate as peace because that's the best word we have for it, but it's so much more than peace. Shalom really means universal flourishing, wholeness, and delight. And it's where all our needs are satisfied and people live with joy. That is the vision of shalom. And the Hebrew prophets were the best at telling us about this, that they proclaimed this vision. And I love how Plantiga describes it. He tries to combine what a lot of the different prophets in our Hebrew Bible have to say. And this is what he said. It's going to be up on the screen. It says, they dreamed of a new age in which human crookedness would be straightened out, rough places made plain. The foolish would be wise and the wise humble. They dreamed of a time when the deserts would flower, the mountains would run with wine, weeping would cease, and people would go to sleep without weapons on their laps. People would work in peace and work to fruitful effect. Lambs would lie down with lions. All nature would be fruitful, benign, and filled with wonder upon wonder. All humans would be knit together in brotherhood and sisterhood. And all nature and all humans would look to God, walk with God, lean toward God, and delight in God. That's what our prophets talk about. And our passage that we read from Isaiah today, it doesn't actually use the Hebrew word shalom, but that's exactly what he's talking about in this magnificent, powerful scripture right at the beginning of the scroll of Isaiah. He gives us this incredible example of peace. When the Hebrew people were in the midst of conflict with their neighbors and wondering what was wrong with the world, he says, but this is what God intends. This is where the world is going. This is what we're called to be. It's a vision where people stream to the mountain of God for instruction so that they could learn to live and understand the world that God intended. And in this world, there is no need for weapons. And so they take their swords and they beat them into plowshares. And their spears they make into pruning hooks because they need tools to get food rather than to hurt one another. And it's this type of vision that draws me to the Christian faith. Why I call myself a follower of Christ, because that's the type of world I want to live in. If that's what God intends, that's where I want to be. And yet, I know the reality. We all know the reality, don't we? We do not live in a world of shalom. In fact, we live in a world that had 648 mass shootings last year, just in this country. And their definition of a mass shooting is defined as where four or more people are shot, not including the shooter. That happened 648 times in 2023, averaging more than two a day. And so how do we get there? How do we go from the reality that we live in to what God intends? Well, the answer is there's no quick solutions. How we get there is not easy. And so when I look to how can we make a difference, I often look to my heroes, the people that were able to practice nonviolence, like Martin Luther King or Gandhi or Jesus. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen the Gandhi movie that came out. I think sometimes in the late 70s, early 80s, powerful, powerful movie. And I love it. I've watched it over and over. But there's this wonderful scene that made me appreciate Gandhi even more. Early on in the movie, he's still down in South Africa, and he's fighting against apartheid down there. And a white clergy person comes and joins him and says, you know, I've heard what you're doing. I wanted to be a part of that. I wanted to see how I could help. And Gandhi is overjoyed that this clergy person is coming, and he says, walk with me. And they start walking, and they're talking, and they turn a corner, and they're going down the street, and there's a couple of people that start giving them a hard time, people who are white in South Africa who didn't feel like they should be walking down the street, especially together. And the white clergy person says to Gandhi, you know what? Why don't we just take another road? Let's go a different direction. Let's avoid this conflict. And Gandhi turns to him and says, doesn't the New Testament say if your enemy strikes you on the right cheek, offer him your left? And the clergy person says, well, I think perhaps that phrase was used metaphorically. And Gandhi says, I'm not so sure. I have thought about it a great deal. And I suspect he meant you must show courage, be willing to take a blow, several blows, to show you will not strike back, nor will you be turned aside. And when you do that, it calls on something in human nature, something that makes his hatred for you decreased and his respect increased. I think Christ grasps that, and I have seen that work. When I think about what can we do, sometimes it's about committing ourselves to say, this is not the way it's supposed to be. This is not what the world is supposed to be like. And I choose to live in a world of nonviolence. I choose to promote a different vision. I love the fact that Gandhi used the Christian scriptures to form his idea of what the world should look like. And that he didn't just talk about it, he chose to live it. Sometimes we have to choose to live it. Maybe that's the prophetic voice we need right now. Not just a voice that says we need to stop this, we need to live it and proclaim a different vision. Not just with our voices, but with our lives and say, this is not the way it's supposed to be. Let me share a better vision.